home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive. We are positively into the hopefully summer months. Hopefully, this good weather's here to stay. It has been a long, hard May for anybody that likes baseball. Long, hard spring for anybody that loves the Orioles around here. I had originally put together the crab cake tour up at Greenmount Station, not just to eat the delicious crab cake up there that's Angelina style, but to also give away Maryland scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. We had the Back to the Future scratch-offs, and I thought it was going to be like Orioles, Mariners, and great afternoon, and it's just last place baseball at this point. We're also going to be at Fadley's next Friday for more last place baseball. Luke will be joining me next Friday as the Angels come to town, and we give away lottery tickets and talk about our friends at Curio Wellness and Coppin State and Liberty Pure and all of our sponsors. John Eisenberg has been my friend for a long, long time, a mentor to me back in the 1980s, as was the late, great Jim Henneman, who we spoke a lot about last week with Rick Vaughn and Charles Steinberg. And I come at this honest. Eisenberg, I've been trying to get him on for about a month, ever since this thing started teetering back in May. And you've got family and books and authorship and this and that and bird tapes and all that. And we said, let's do it in early June. And here we are. It just gets worse and worse, John. And I know we're talking after they swept the White Sox over the weekend, but I there was no middle ground of, hey, it's teetering a little bit. It's like the plane crashed on all of this stuff. And then, how are you? I mean, it's a
Good.
lot less fun for you and Wick when the team's in last place. I know.
Yeah, it was the last for me, for a lot of people in Baltimore, right? I mean, it's just sort of a bummer to watch. So it goes. I mean, certainly. I mean, I've been writing Orioles baseball since the mid-80s. I've seen a lot of bad seasons, Nestor. And so it's not as bad as 1988 when they started 0-21. This is not that bad. So when you look up and they're 6-34 or whatever it was. But it's not like it's the first bad season I've seen. It's a surprising bad season, I will say. And I mean, we can unpack into exactly what led to that if you want, but
I'll do that at the end of the segment. I want to give Jim
okay.
Henneman some love first because
Okay.
you're one of the few people I feel like I'm trying to think of who I didn't see last week at Jim Henneman's funeral and who I didn't talk to or think about or talk about or who it didn't come to me. Everyone from, Jim Palmer and Rob Brown's son, Scotty, and Rick Vaughn, the whole legend of the PR side, Charles Steinberg being on with me and telling stories about closing Memorial Stadium in 91 and 88 and fantastic fan. I've had all of those conversations on and off the air, as well as Katie Griggs and David Rubenstein and pitching and Mike Elias, and we'll do that. But the thing about the history of this team and what your project, the Bird Tapes, tries to get into is when I saw Scotty Brown, I thought, Bob Brown. Bob, no one knew more about Oriole baseball than Bob Brown. He's gone. Can't ask him. Okay, maybe Helen Conklin. And then I thought, well, there's Rick Vaughn. He knows a lot. And Vaughn would say, no. Henneman. Henneman was the ultimate Oriole historian before he passed last week. If you wanted authority on that, you would go to Jim Henneman. And then I'm thinking, all right, Vaughn, you might be next. And then I spent time with Charles Steinberg, and he gets dates. Like Charles Steinberg is Rain Man, Mary Lou Henner, me on dates. And I started going through old tear sheets with me and Henneman and Ken Rosenthal at the Evening Sun. You, of course, were at the Morning Sun. I don't have a lot of bylines where you and I shared bylines on the news, but I have a lot with Jim Henneman. And I went back to all of this and I left you out because you're the outsider. He's from Texas. He's from around here. And you have really, over the last 40 years, amassed the people in all of this that if I'm looking for a clarification in Oriole history, I'm going to Steinberg. I'm going to Rick Vaughn. I think I'm coming to you at this point. You're trying, and it is such a rich tapestry of history. And when we lose a Jim Henneman, we lose an encyclopedia. We lose a whole volume, right?
No question about it. I mean, Jim, I got to Baltimore. My first season, Oriole season, was 1985. Jim Henneman was on the Oriole beat. And listen, I'd come from Texas. I wasn't around the Texas Rangers that much. I was coming to Baltimore. I thought I'm coming to royalty, baseball royalty, because that's really what they'd been for a quarter century. Little did I know, I'm coming to witness pretty much the collapse of their dynasty over the next 3 or 4 years. But anyway, Hinman was there, and so I'm at spring training. I'm on the road. Just a wonderful guy. I
Did you go
mean,
to his
yes, at that.
barbecue?
Yeah, I did go to spring training barbecue in Florida.
I didn't know there was such a thing, and now I've been
Yeah.
asking everyone in the after because I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't at spring training in that era, but I started
Yeah.
going in 92, 93, but I didn't know of the legend of the barbecue.
Yeah, he would host a barbecue at this little rented place that he had, and everybody came, and he'd sit at the grill and do really, I mean, he would grill for like 4 hours. He's over there sweating and drinking beer, and it was a great barbecue, and people just hung out and talked, and the players were there, the managers. It was pretty. It was just different then. There wasn't the sort of the wall between maybe the team and the media wasn't. It wasn't so tall and it wasn't so firm. And you could hang out at a barbecue with Frank Robinson, and everybody knew everybody and got along. It was a lot more family. I'm not saying. I mean, we covered the team. We reported. We ripped them when we had to. But it was just more of a. It was a smaller environment. That's one thing. As I'm doing these bird tapes, one thing because I witnessed it, I came along in time to see. I don't think people really understand that the Orioles themselves, the front office was tiny. For it was a small family business. You mentioned Helen Conklin. These are names people don't know these names, but Bob Brown they may have known. But
How
there's
many
like
times I
20.
called that office and Helen, hello, hey,
Yeah,
Nestor,
there's like
what can,
20 people in the front office. It
yeah.
was a little family business, especially when Jerry Hofberger on the team, and then a little bit after that. And then they started, Edward Bennett Williams bought it, and things were run out of DC, and they started drawing more people, and they needed marketing people, and it started to grow. But it was really, really small, and Hinneman certainly was there for all of it, and he sort of embodied that era, I thought. And yeah, you could talk to him, ask him about anything. And he actually wrote a piece for me for the Bird Tapes not that long ago. It was probably six months ago. I put up an interview. At the Bird Tapes, I'm publishing all these old interviews I had from when I wrote an oral history of the team 25 years ago. And I had an interview with Walter Yauss. Walter Yauss, who's the baseball legend, was a scout. He ran the Johnnies and Leonies, the amateur team. Everybody who was anybody played for Walter Yauss, and he was a scout. And Jim Hinneman had played for him. So I'm putting up this interview with Walter Yauss, which is really a name out of Oriole history. And Hinneman had played for him and knew him. So I said, Jim, can you write a piece about Walter? Tell the people about Walter. He said, sure. So he wrote me a nice piece about Walter Yauss. And I put it up, got a lot of response. It was great. We were talking about doing some other pieces when, I think his health took a turn for the worse. And it's just unfortunate, really sad. With him goes, you are right, goes just a repo. Brooks Robinson once told me he copy edited that. He copy edited that book I wrote, 500 pages of oral history, Oriole history, because he told me, he said, I've been with the team since 1955. I think I know just about everybody who's ever played for the Orioles. He told me that in 2000, and which was quite a statement to make. And Hinneman certainly covered just about everybody who ever played for the Orioles or knew them. So he's not far off in that realm of just knowing and knowing everybody.
By the way, Jim Palmer would be the next line of demarcation to did it happen or did it not? Jim Palmer has known and touched everyone since
Yeah,
1963, 64, which is
absolutely. The
that's
only
an incredible and has never been more than a wrist away for ever, right? He's always been on the broadcast, always been like from all of it. I mean, and I sort of gulp when I think about all of this because that part, and I talked to Brett Hollander about this at length at Jim Henneman's, that part's slipping away a little bit with the generation of your boy Wick and my kid Barry. My kid's 40 now, Lucan is 40, and we talk about will this stuff matter if it doesn't matter? You know what I mean? And I know Bird Tapes, all of this is built into what Mr. Rubenstein bought. This is what you
Yeah.
purchased. You purchased this history. You need to bring it to life better than what the hell this has been. But
Well,
there is this thing that created all of this that needs to be not just told, but supported and lived through a little bit because that's What makes it different than the Tampa Rays or the Sacramento A's this week?
Totally true. And that's what I always, when I was working at the Ravens, and I would sit in on these meetings, and I would tell them, this is sort of marketing, I would say, listen, as great as you're doing on the field, as much as you want to be more popular than, say, the Washington Commanders or the Eagles or something like that, you got about your recent history is great, but you're missing about 60 years that they had before that, and they have more history. They just have more, and it's an incredible history all these teams have, and that is what separates them. It makes them individuals. It's what makes it special. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm certainly the one you're preaching to the choir. I think it's all really important. What happens with the Orioles in any season is part of a continuum. It is not just things that started with the rebuild in 2019, you know. So we've seen a lot of this stuff before. And so I think the history is what makes it special. I agree. And David Rubenstein, he knows that. I mean, he City College, class of 66. And he's an Oriole fan, and so he knows that whether that trickles down to everybody, we'll see. And they've done a little better job lately. Late in the Angelos era, they started doing a little bit better about bringing in some of the guys in spring training, which to me is a must. You've got this great history. I used to see it at Dodger Town in LA, you know, in Vero Beach, Florida, back in the day. The Dodgers were there to Sandy Koufax in a golf cart. Or at the Yankees spring training. I mean, good God, you know, Whitey Ford and Mickey Mantle, you know, it's just incredible. So the Orioles have that, and they need to, and they've been bringing them around a little bit more,
Well,
and
Cal
that's not,
Ripken's behind home plate, right? So, like,
yeah, that
that's
helps.
that, look, man. I mean, we go down the river. Name me an owner. If I would have told you a year ago that the owner's first move is to make a bobblehead of himself and give it out, I would say that's not a good sign. I would say that the firing the manager on a Saturday and not showing up until Milwaukee on Tuesday, that's not leadership. Whatever
Yeah, that
Katie
wasn't
Griggs
good.
is, this is not leadership. Whatever, I am gravely concerned in a general sense about whether these people know what they're doing and how long their curve is going to be to figure it out. And I am gravely impatient as a 56-year-old guy, and this team hasn't won in 42 years. Not just about human stuff about how I've been treated, but how other people are being treated, and I've learned a lot about that. And this is just not a good circumstance right now, and it needs to be cleaned up in a lot of ways. And the pitching side of it, and the money side of it, and the leadership side of it, and who's buying the groceries, and who the man, and they have an interim manager. Just all of this smacks of somebody better get in front of this. And I'll
Yeah.
tell you why in a minute, but it has to do with business and things I'm hearing on the street from Birdland members that have finally given them some money and said, I'm willing to come back because it doesn't say Angelos on it anymore. And this has been their experience thus far, and it's not good.
Well, I'm okay with baseball decisions, some of them not working out. You have to accept that people in charge are not always going to make the right decision. That is baseball. I give them a little bit of longer leash on that, and I certainly give the ownership longer leash. You know, it's been what, a little over a year, but the 42 years you mentioned, people are impatient. People are angry. Certainly this year there's been some malpractice. And that is a problem because there are things here that could be a winning situation. You've got the good young players, you're developing them, things are not working out great. And yeah, I understand why people are angry and frustrated, and people in my family are, you know, just as normal as anyone else, kind of pissed.
Well,
So,
let's start with this then. Bring me John Eisenberg, columnist. Bring me Wick, your boy. Bring me the dinner table. Bring me what you know about media and baseball. I mean, It's very, very easy if you and I want to play the Mark Fine PR director role and say, had a lot of injuries, just been a lot of injury, had a lot of bad luck, right? A lot of bad luck. And then I would point to Rutschman and I would point to the pitching decisions and I would point to the decisions of drafting not pitchers and saying, well, what is your strategy? Now Burns is hurt out in Arizona again, and I'm not even on that train because if he doesn't want to be here, I don't want to pay him $200 million. But there is a philosophical part of this for me where there's also, if I'm Rubenstein, I didn't hire Elias. Elias has now fired the manager and scapegoated sort of the manager at a bad time. The manager was only playing with the players he had. I mean, Mateo's
Oh,
still playing
totally.
center field. You know, all the things
The
we blame
manager.
Brandon Hyde for in April are still going to be there in July.
I mean, the manager with the manager went sort of an era of intense platooning, which I think has changed a little bit. And so he, but he was like, I thought he got a raw deal, to be honest with you. And he on the list of things that have gone wrong with this season, he's about number six in the power rankings, and it's getting pretty small percentage at that point. So that did not solve the problem at all. So it's too bad he's not here. I don't think they're going to be any worse than they were early in the season. I think they're going to get a little bit better as some of these guys come back. But no. The first thing, I mean, to me, the number one thing you want to talk about, the most important things that went wrong, certainly the failure to invest in pitching and the way that pitching was. I mean, look what's happened in the last few games. Yes, the last 10 days, say, they started winning some games. Maybe they're not playing the best teams in the league with the White Sox, but they're starting to win some games. Why? Because the pitchers are going. Dean Kramer goes into the seventh inning. Night after night here, they've been Charlie Morton back from the dead, a pretty good major league pitcher for a lot of his career. Too old at 41 to be getting $15 million, but he can pitch. He can pitch a 6 2/3 innings. So they get decent pitching, you start to win. So they definitely underfunded the pitching. They didn't, aside from just signing a free agent, didn't go out and say trade for somebody like the Red Sox did. I mean, they're way underfunded in the pitching. And, they certainly just sold the rest of the team short that way. That would be my number one problem.
What's your number two problem?
Number two problem is the young players, in particular Rutschman, not panning out. I mean, you have built your team around him, and it looks like, I mean, Gunnar Henderson, no problems there. Maybe he's not shouldn't be the shortstop. We'll see. He's pretty good. I mean, Gunnar is not a problem. Gunnar is good. All right. I really don't have a problem with him. Maybe he needs a little coaching here and there on some things, but he's a really nice young player. He's going to be great. Adley Rutschman, just for what has it been a year now? He's hitting 205 or whatever with no power. What is going on there? I mean, at this point, it's very easy to say they took the wrong guy, Rutschman over Bobby Witt Jr. That's a no-brainer at this point. And that's not to say that Rutschman, who's been an all-star and he catches a good game, and he does as a good catcher, not that he throws out that many people anymore, but he does bring, there's nothing like having that, some ballast to your whole thing with having a really good all-star catcher. But he needs to be way better than he is, way better. And so that's a problem when you've got your number, you got a 1-1, as they say, and he's not playing like a 1-1. That's a big deal. And then there's a million other decisions that were made. I hate, don't get me going. I hated the trade deadline last year. I hated that he gave up some young players for, sort of journeyman relievers like Soto. I can barely watch when he comes in the game, and I feel like, yeah, he's throws hard, doesn't know where it's going. I don't really trust him. Why did they give up Danny Coulomb, who wanted to stay here and keep CNL Perez? I mean, there's a lot of decisions that were made for various reasons. These are smart people, but I don't like a I don't I didn't like a lot of them, and so as a result. You wind up with sort of a pitching disaster, sort of climbing their way out of it a little bit now, but the deal is done. They're 14 games under 500, and it's a wasted season when Gunnar Henderson is 24 years old and is already what 400 hits by age 24. It's quite a list of people that have done that. So you hate to waste these seasons when these guys are young.
John Eisenberg is our guest. He is the author of all things Bird Tapes, amongst other books on quarterbacks and racehorses and record books and all sorts of things that he's done. Books, no book right now, right? Just Bird Tapes right now.
just bird tapes right now, and having a lot of fun with it, and getting a nice response. Got a nice community going, and some new interviews being put up. I put up Scott McGregor this week. I had a great discussion with him. You talk about Orioles history, and he dove deep into explaining how in the world he became a winning pitcher in the first place when he's got an 87-mile-an-hour fastball. Sounds like completely bizarre in today's baseball. You could never do it, but he was great. I've got an interview coming with Janet Marie Smith, which was really good. I had an all-time interview with Bob Gritch. Just an all-time interview when he talked about his early days in baseball, and at the end of it, I said, "You were a nice player. You're a really good storyteller." And he just started laughing because he told some great stories about just becoming a professional baseball player in the first place and how raw he was and coming through with Don Baylor. Just a great storyteller. So we're rolling at the bird tapes. There's plenty going on.
I had the senseis on last month, and I felt the same way. I felt like probably the best conversation I've had all year, and I had never really had him on, at length at any point. These in-depth conversations, and John, I would even say for like Mike Elias and going through the trauma he's going through right now. You came here in '85, so I guess it's Hank Peters at that time, then Roland Heeman, and we can go through the litany of Sid Thrifts and Pat Gillick and what was expected of them with the media and things that you would learn about that you could write a book about later in life and have bird tapes and all that. It feels like this part of it, the where the world is of sports and media, the unchronicled part and the I didn't say that, he said that, and lower leg injury. We got Mullins now. We don't know what's even wrong. Like it's like hockey injuries now. Everything's on the down low and to be kept away from the gamblers and like all that goes into all of this. The history part of it is so grand because I don't know that the current is going to hold the weight in that way, or there's going to be this sort of anecdotal storytelling about baseball the way that Bob Gritch told it to you.
Well, that could be. Yeah, there's no question. Everything. There's a lot fewer minor leagues now, and because they weren't profitable, and these teams didn't want to pay for so many minor league teams. And his minor league stories are great. And yeah, the storytelling is great. But of course, what makes it all great is that you know how it all ended. They won, and people like that stuff. And so, yeah, if you're just every you got to have a little of that. You can't just be, 7 games, somewhere between 7 games under 500 and 7 games over 500. At some point, you got to give them some high watermarks, and so that it makes the losing more tolerable. So, yeah, the fact that all those guys from the late 70s and early 80s, it's really important that they finally won that World Series in 83. Because that made it all tolerable. The fact that they blew it in 79 and had all these stories with Earl, who wasn't even there for them to win the World Series in 83. But the fact that they did, makes all that storytelling, it just raises it like four notches, and it's what gives it weight.
Dude, you haven't
So,
even
yeah.
pimped the one interview you did that I am. I mean, I'd love to have Bob Gritch on the show. Maybe I will at one point. I already pimped my DeSenseis, and I do Oriole history the way you do it, but not as intensely as you do it and written books on it and all of that. I'm having John Miller, the other John Miller, on, not the one that kept calling the A's Oakland last week to piss everybody off, but the John Miller that wrote the book on Earl Weaver. I'm having him on this week to tell all of these old stories and stuff. But you have Fred Lynn on, man. Like, Fred Lynn. Lynn to me, like you mentioned, guys that are in the Hall of Good or very good. If Gunnar Henderson turns out to be as good as Fred Lynn, it's pretty good, but not Hall of Fame good. But I don't know. But Fred Lynn to me, that was the one I was jealous because I love Fred Lynn.
Well, I had him on because I felt like that era of Oriole baseball, those years are very easily forgotten. 85, he was here 85 through 88. It's only the years when they fell apart. He watched it fall apart. And yet he was a really nice ball player, a really nice baseball player for a long time. The Hall of Very Good. I think injuries undermined his career a little bit.
He ran into walls every month.
Just a great baseball player. Even here at age 35, look up the metrics. He's 35 years old And he's played a great center field.
I
He
was
really
so
did.
excited when they got him because I just love Fred Lynn. You know,
Yeah, he's a
to
great
I
ball
ran
player.
into him once in life. I was at a Super Bowl like in Houston, and he was there. I pimping something for some like I ran into him. I looked up like that's Fred Lynn, and I went up, said hello to him. He said, "Hey, call me, come on." I've never bothered
Yeah.
him, but I'm gonna like I really need to get him on because like.
You'll
Red
do.
Sox, my cousin, the whole thing, 73, 74, 75. He was a part of like all of that and Dewey Evans. And, you know, he's an interesting guy in that he was in Boston early, kind of like Ripken had a chance to win in 75 and then spent chasing it, right? Went to California. They were really good, but not good enough. Same thing, came back here. And by the time he got here, what was here wasn't anymore. And then you know, we've been through these eras where somebody like me and watching. The historian of a Jim Henneman, we lose him last week, and I see all these faces and places, and I start talking about Memorial Stadium and all these eras. This 42-year period that when I met Mr. Rubenstein at the Beth Tofilo congregation last November, I said those 10,000 empty seats at the playoff game, I said, that's trauma here, Mr. Rubenstein. There's been a lot of trauma here. You know, one thing you and I've talked about, man, we've done like 30 minutes here, like loving life and smiling, even the teams in life. We haven't said Angelos. We haven't said anything about those 30 years and any of that period that sort of darkened this thing. I've had some tough mental health in recent times about this baseball team because of literally. I mean, it's not even laughable. It's sort of like, do I want to do this anymore? What am I
Yeah.
doing? This for these people who come in from out of town and they're billionaires, and I've been here witnessing all of it, and they don't even want to sit in a room and hear what's happened. They don't care what's happened to me or you or anything or anybody, or whether it's Terry Crowley or Mike Bordick or B.J. Surhoff or Brooks or you know any of that. They don't care about any of that. They need to sell tickets, sell memberships. They need the team to be better. They think they need corporate this and corporate that. They're getting $600 million of free money and they're drinking from the fire hose. And they thought they were going to do all of this around the winning team. And now they've got the bad news bears and they got
Yeah.
all this money coming in and it just doesn't smack of competence for me, John. And you know what else? After spending time with a lot of people at Jim Henneman's funeral last week who are still in, none of them have any confidence either. And I'm talking about from Manfred down. I'm talking about what's your TV deal? What's your streaming deal? How are you getting people out? The whole sport, all of it. Two teams in this market now with the Washington Baltimore. Just a lot of things that
Yeah.
we get romantic about and all that. But this needs to be rectified with a lot of energy. And you know who sold me on that? Rick Vaughn. Rick Vaughn said to me last week, this was a lot of work making the Baltimore Orioles what they were in the 70s and 80s. It took a lot of passionate, real work. And I ain't seeing that being done right now, John. On or off the field, really, with the community, with sort of other than trying to give out bobbleheads and buy authenticity, I'm thumbs down on the new ownership, and I'll tell him to his face. I'll tell any of them, based on lots of things. I'm thumbs down because I don't see good ideas. I don't see new things happening, and I'm
Well,
tired of being wistful about the past and buying orange jerseys and thinking about 1971. You know what I mean?
what needs to change for sure? What needs to change for it all starts with the product that you have to sell. They have to get more pitching. They have to stop getting picked off third base. They have to start developing players who come up here and play. I mean, you just have to have a winning team. Yeah, they had 101 wins a couple years ago. It was a really young team, and they could have gone farther that year. They didn't. That happens in baseball. One of these years, it needs to be them. And they just need to have, you got to spend more money than you are on pitch. You got to have veteran players. I think the basic mistake that has been made here is relying too much. It's great to develop young players, identify them and develop them. You have to have some veterans, and you have to pay for quality veterans on your team. That's why the Texas Rangers won a couple of years ago. It's just amazing. They had veteran pitchers who stepped in instead of the young guys that you hope do all right after a 101 win season. And so, yeah, Corbin Burns for one season. You have to find that. You can't just settle on 23-year-old guys that you hope are good. Pay some money for this. Extend some of your guys. Easier said than done with Scott Boras as your client. But you know what? Show an ounce of faith. Show the people. We have extended, players. We're building for the future with these guys. And there's been none of that. Those are the things that upset me. And once you have that, and it's a multi-layered thing we're talking about here, but yeah, it has to be better. Whatever their decision making is being based on, it's blown up in their faces, and it does call into question, what are we doing here? And so I don't know what that'll mean going forward, but I do believe there's talent in this pipeline. You have to put some veterans around it too. You have to pay some money to have a good baseball team. You can't. That's a lesson that was learned. I think, Anthony Santander walks. Okay, this here's one example. Okay, he walk. They could have signed him. I sort of was okay with them not signing him just because I thought, well, he's never going to be better than he was last year. He's not a high average guy. Wonderful in the clubhouse. Great guy, everybody loves the story, but I mean, are you going to pay $100 million for him? I think you're going to regret it after a year or two. However, you know what they're missing—an un very underrated thing—the protection he gave these young guys in the lineup, night after night, with 44 home runs, and they thought they could replicate it. They didn't. So
So
they
did the
do
Blue
miss.
Jays, and they haven't.
Yeah, so they miss him, but okay, you didn't bring him back. The guy you did bring in is hurt all the time. You knew he was going to be hurt all the time, Tyler O'Neill. So bring in someone who's actually going to be on the flipping field. And that was a key mistake, and they are missing that. And you just keep relying on these young players. You're asking too much of them. Put some veterans around them. Look at the guys who are coming through. Ryan O'Hearn, Ramon Urias. These are not the homegrown guys. They're 30-year-old major league players who know how to play baseball. And so you need more of those guys, maybe a higher caliber even than those guys, and you might have something around, give Gunnar some help.
John Eisenberg is here. He is still doing the bird tapes out at Substack, still adding and getting guys like Fred Lynn on that I'm going to go listen to now. And you sold me on the Bobby Grich thing. I'm sold on how they
Yeah,
sold
it's not
him
out
on
yet. Not out
moving it
yet.
from shortstop to second base. All right, you're reeling me in. That's good. That's
Okay,
good.
good.
Yeah, of course you've been reeling me in for 4 decades now. Elias, I'll buy into all of this, and even I've told the story. My buddy finally gave them money after 30 years of not really wanting to give it to Angelos, and gave them a couple grand on the Birdland account. Now regrets it because of, like, the full price tickets, teams in last place, they're not going to get his money again. And I think from a business concern, that's my business concern, is that they had one chance to make a first impression with lots of people, and it hasn't been great. Making his own bobblehead mistake. Go listen to the Rick Vaughn piece. He'll tell you why. I'll let the
Right.
professionals tell you why. People that ran sports for 40 years tell you why. It's a bad side. Why? And the fact that it ever got done tells me that there's no grown-ups in there to tell him why it's a bad idea. I know
Yeah.
that firsthand from the way I've been treated as a professional. They're treating me the same way Angelos did. That's not good enough. It's below the fold. It below the bar of anything I or anybody around me should accept. That being said, from the outside, if I'm just witnessing this and I'm not a media member that is pretending not to be a media member, Saturday morning, Preakness morning, they fire the manager at a home game on Preakness Saturday. The media is already fractured. There's going to be a couple of baseball people in the dugout. It's Preakness Day. BAL can't be there. They're married to the race. You do that, and the general manager and the owner and everybody hides on Saturday and Sunday. They go off to
Yeah.
Milwaukee. They hold a press conference in the dugout. Now, this isn't, I'll get to Mark Andrews in a minute, and we'll get to Harbaugh and Tucker and Tyler Loop and all of that in a minute, too. I don't know what's happened. Maybe it's this Orange Schittler running the country, and what accountability and what honesty is and what integrity is and what a lifetime of trying to build that kind of trust and not lying to people, whether you're a politician, school teacher, journalist, whatever business owner, whatever you are, stand in front of whatever you are. Because whatever that is, That's what you are. And that has nothing to do with your baseball acumen, your drafting ability, your ability to sign pitchers. That has to do with like what your parents taught you and how you react as a leader of people. And hiding like that to me, done. That tells me all I need to know, just in a general sense, that these people don't have their shiz together, John.
Well, I used to say always, Rick Sutcliffe came in here in 1992 and taught Mike Mussina how to be a pro, and that was stand at your locker, win, lose, or draw. After a good performance or a bad performance, I used to learn a lot from people that would stand there after a loss, and that's the same sort of thing. Just be accountable. It's not that hard. It really isn't that hard. But definitely things have changed, and
That's a Gen Z
it's.
thing too, right?
Well, no, what it is more than anything, I mean, a lot of these teams now, a lot of the media stuff is driven from a podium. It's a lot more carefully guarded than it was. And access is, the media itself is fractured. And so, they're able to govern who does or doesn't get to ask questions more. And they're careful with that and can use that sometimes. And so, yeah, it's just they don't hear as many tough questions as they used to, or and that's not, I'm talking about a non-podium setting. It just doesn't happen as much anymore. And that's just the way the media has gone. The way professional sports is, it's not just the Baltimore Orioles, it's across all sports. There's not as much access as there was in my heyday as a sports writer. And so that's sad. There's no going back. And a lot of these guys have their own YouTube channels and they're putting out their own media, and there's just no winning that war. And so that's tough. And so they're not used to those tough, they said, well, we just don't have to answer those questions. So I think that's where it stems from.
But when you have an empty stadium and you're asking people for money and you're in last place and you fire your manager and you hide for 3.5 days, I mean, I don't, John, that's just below the bar.
It is.
It's
It
just
is.
below the
No,
bar.
no
That's
argument
an
for me.
organizational failure to the fan base, to your own state. You've lowered your own standards, and you're in last place, and you're new to town, and you're trying to get people who've already been treated like trash for 30 years to get back in and row the boat and believe in what you're doing. I this is why you laughed at the mental health part of this. It's just sort of like I don't. I'm not leading the walkout. I'm not anti Rubenstein. I'm not anti or pro Angelos. I'm pro Baltimore. I'm pro like, what do you stand for? And what are we going to stand for in regard to giving you top dollar and trying to support the $50 million player habits of Gunnar Henderson and making the $220 million, habits of this and treating every fan like an ATM machine with streaming, with logoed stuff, just all of it. I'm in, but what's your responsibility? Where's the
Fair
Bill
enough.
of Rights? What do you owe the fans other than old Boog Pal videos and $17 beers?
Well, what you need to give them is consistent winning to start with. Start, as I said it before, start right there.
I would settle
Do
for consistent integrity. This is where you, me, and Luke get sideways because Luke always comes back to teams got to be better. And I hear that. I think that's obvious. The people have to be better. Treat
yeah.
everybody better. Welcome everybody. Just, dude, how about this? How about this just as something that happened a minute ago that's just kind of outrageous to me? They send the text out at 9 in the morning and say they're moving the game time from 6:30 to 4:30.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know, like, apparently that's cool, and some people showed up, and you can exchange the tickets. And but what if you built your night around a sitter? What if you had a real job? What if
Well, there's
you
no doubt.
planned the whole family? What if you had to pick your like? You're trying to make a memory. Like, I'm not saying they should take a rain out. I'm not even making a case for the thunderstorm that hit Friday night. Whatever. I'm just saying, moving the game time up 7 hours before the game and expecting people to move. And I was astonished that as many people were there, let alone their own employees and the people selling popcorn. It has no emotional intelligence at all. None. And I'm not, look, dude, I'm a dude. I'm 56 years old. You live in an Archie Bunker's Dundalk. I wasn't born on emotional intelligence, but I was born on some like what's right and what's wrong on an integrity level. And I don't feel, I'm not smelling anything that smells like these people have any sense of any of that when they're moving game times the morning of the game. I've just never heard of such a thing, John.
Actually, that one, and I think has been done. Actually, was done back in way back in the day in baseball before they expected so many people to come to games. They would change the game times. You know, you go
Based
back
on
to sh
radar?
yeah. Who knows what it's based on? Anyway, too much information. But actually, they would do that kind of stuff. But they stopped doing it when TV got involved, and they couldn't change it. But now they own their own stations and all this stuff. They can do it. So, yeah, I mean, there is no doubt that there's a lot that needs to be done. But I will contend that if you show that you know what you're doing on the field, it gets a lot easier to do what you do off the
But
field.
what if you can't? What if
Well,
you can't
I don't believe
win?
that they
Then all the
can.
rest of it you can get right to me. And I've said that. That's what pissed Angelos off and got me thrown out 23 years ago. I'm like, you don't
Yeah.
have to win to get me there. Just
Right.
make sure the hot dogs are good and the beer's reasonable and the access is good and everybody's friend. You know, like those are baseline for any business. My food's good, but my toilets are dirty. No, that's not good
Right.
enough. It's just
Yeah.
it's not good enough anywhere else. And I John, you and I are locked in. I'm an Aparicio. They think they've got me forever. No matter how they
Yeah.
treat me, they're gonna get my, you know, once we start winning, you'll come back. That was always the ethos of the Angelos family. You'll be begging us for playoff tickets. You know, you'll be left out if you don't get in now. And I don't know that these people can sell anybody on any of that. I think they need to sell their people on the integrity and on the community and what
Nori.
they're doing. And they haven't done that so far. And when their general manager's firing the manager and hiding, I mean,
Right, well,
and the
that
owner's
wasn't
making
good.
bobbleheads of himself. That this is why I'm not trying to be negative Nestor today because they're in last place. I'm trying to look at it full
Yeah.
focus as a column, as an outsider coming in and saying, what are you doing? What are they doing well? What are they
Well,
doing well?
if they still if there was still a newspaper here and I still had 700 words to spend, it wouldn't have been pretty on that 3.5 day wait. No question about it.
There
That
you
was
go.
not.
There you go. Football, anything, you got any parting shot on the Tucker thing or the Ravens thing or just any, because I could do
Nah.
45 minutes on that. Like
Yeah.
that's
We'll
gonna
save
go
that one for
away.
next time.
They
We'll do that next time.
orchestrated that to go away, and it will go away, right? The Tucker
Oh,
thing's just
it'll
gonna
go
go
away.
away.
It's already gone away. And yeah, it's gone away. So we can talk about it next
You
time.
know what I'm
That's for
gonna
sure.
do, John? I'm gonna have you back on when we get the results of the investigation from the National Football League.
Okay. All
Is that
right.
good?
A
Tell me about that bird tapes. What do you have coming? When's Gritch coming?
little later this summer, I'm put out once a week, usually an interview with an Oriole legend or somebody that was associated with the team. I'm also writing original stuff. I did a thing on the history of the Oriole bird and the debut of the Oriole bird in 1954. It totally blew up, I have to say. Really, really big post. So just Oriole history, really, at birdtapes.substack.com. And having a good time with it, build up a very nice community there, and we just keep rolling.
I'm going to put you in of all-time historian. Anytime I have an Oriole question, I do have this. Did you see the Louis Aparicio RFK Stadium bat boy picture? Does that mean anything to you?
No, it does not.
Okay. It doesn't mean any. Do you have a minute or do you really have to go? Because like
I have to go.
you have
I
to
do.
go. Do
Yeah.
me a favor, go to my Facebook and find
Okay.
the picture of Louis Aparicio in 1963 at RFK Stadium
Okay.
and note the bat boy, Jim Henneman.
Oh, okay. I will check it out. That's great.
John Eisenberg can be checked out at the Bird Tapes at Substack. I'm Nestor. We're WNST. Stay with us.